You're listening to Informa Health and Nutrition's Hemp Collective Podcast, an industry-wide effort to cultivate responsible business practices and dig into the latest topics facing the hemp and CBD industry.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Hemp Collective Podcast Series. I'm Fran Schumwetter, Director of Content Marketing at Informa Markets. Joining us today is Patrick Ray. Patrick is the CEO and co-founder of Canopy Boulder, one of the most active investors in the cannabis industry. Since their founding in 2013, Patrick has led investments in over 115 companies, yes, 115, in the hemp, CBD, and ancillary cannabis tech space. Prior to Canopy Boulder, Patrick worked within the natural products industry for 15 years. Welcome, Patrick.
Thanks, Fran. Happy to be here.
I'm so glad you're here, and it's great to catch up here. So today, of course, we're talking money. We're talking about the movement of money and the growth within the cannabis industry. So let's just get right into it. So we'll start kind of at the beginning, and we'll dive down into the present and the future. So from the time that Canopy Boulder founded to today, what have you seen change related to the types of businesses that are looking for investment now?
Well, there's certainly more, but definitely there's been a bit of an arc where early when we started in 2013, we saw a lot of hardware and ancillary technologies related to consumption. Then we saw the rise of publicly traded companies in Canada, and they were sort of drawing a lot of investment capital. Then we saw in the U.S. Investors start moving towards license applications, or teams that were pursuing new license applications in different states that were legalizing. There was definitely a period where there were reverse takeover RTOs. So companies could merge into publicly traded shells and become public. Now we're seeing a lot of interest in the U.S. multi-state operators. They have done really well, and we're starting to see quarter over quarter sequential growth in the 15 to 20% range, and that's appealing, and it's becoming more stable. People in the public markets are starting to understand that. There are now a renewed interest in licenses and trading licenses. A friend of mine who does it talked about how it's kind of like playing Monopoly with these licensed businesses. And now we're seeing the investors come back to ancillary products and services technology, because the companies that are, you know, making and processing and selling cannabis, they need technology to run their businesses even better. They're realizing that now. And so it's been a very interesting arc.
So there's kind of a cycle almost. There's a push and a pull and then a push again. And that's interesting to hear about the publicly traded market. Can you just talk to us a little bit about that? Like, how much are we seeing in the publicly traded world?
The first public stocks that investors were putting money into were the Canadian publicly traded companies, the Canadian licensed producers. And there was a race for canopy growth. How many square meters under cultivation? Canada is very geographically diverse, but it has a population that's about the size of California. It does have export potential, but we're starting to see that might be a little more challenging to realize than not. So the prices in the Canadian stocks really, really went up into mid-2019. They sort of peaked, and then now they've come down. And when I mean say come down, they've come down 80, 90%. The stock prices have from those highs. In that same time, the U.S., though it has a hurdle with federal legalization, it's a much larger market, many more consumers, and these cannabis businesses that are multi-state operators, meaning they have licenses in multiple states, they've gone public, and they've become the darling of public stock investors right now interested in the cannabis industry. So we're seeing some of them report hundreds of millions of dollars in quarterly sales and 15 to 20% growth quarter over quarter. So it's definitely the U.S. cannabis industry is starting to have its moment.
Like a gold rush.
Yes.
And what about the investor mix? I mean, types of investors, activists, seed capital, equity. Has that mix evolved over these 5 years?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the early stages in 2013, 14, really, you just saw very progressive angel and activist driven investors, not an activist investor per se, but someone who's driven by the cause and wants to be part of it. But, you know, high speculative type investment environment. Then we had sort of publicly traded shells and entrepreneurs and investors. You often see a company starting up led by an investment banker who's going to run a business that's going to cultivate cannabis. And that's sort of a more of a trade than starting a business. We saw then the hedge funds come in because they like liquidity. And then we have speculative retail public stock investors, sort of you and me. Now that we're, you know, at that point, you know, you start to be able to buy and sell shares of these cannabis stocks, these penny stocks. You see a lot of that. And then a rise of VC funds, you know, small, under $100 million usually in AUM, VC funds that are focused on cannabis specifically, family offices. And now we're starting to see mainstream VC funds and investors come in as well to invest mostly in ancillary products and services. But we are seeing some of them invest their own capital into licensed businesses.
Well, today there's a lot going on in the marketplace. Has the risk propensity shifted? I mean, 2020, it's really put a damper on some of the retail marketplace. And again, we're seeing so many consumer brands out there. Have we seen any softening? And, you know, and is there any kind of shifting going on in terms of risk propensity there?
I think a lot of, or almost all investors, took a pause when COVID hit this last spring. And, it's for good reason. You know, if you can't predict where the what the world's going to look like in a week, how do you predict it in a month? How do you predict it in a year? So there's just a lot of uncertainty. It gave everybody pause. But once the state by state, cannabis was deemed essential and dispensaries were allowed to stay open and processors were allowed to manufacturers and growers were allowed to continue to cultivate, the company's performance is now leading the interest from investors. So as the companies that are starting to report sales and even in our portfolio, we've seen incredible growth in the sales of our companies that are serving these state licensed cannabis companies. We're starting to see investors come back and share prices go up. And I predict, a very strong next 12 months from a public markets perspective and an investing perspective for the cannabis industry.
Are we seeing more of that growth on the consumer branded product side of things, or is there still continued growth, or has there been some course correcting on the supply chain side? I heard about gluts in the supply chain, sort of this rush to grow, rush to convert. And all of a sudden, it's kind of like oil. Anyway, there's more in the market than the demand. So what's going on there?
Well, 2019 proved it was hard to grow commercially appealing hemp, high quality hemp. And the supply chain was squeezed really from two directions. One direction was oversupply from the farmers, and it was often very low quality hemp. So you hear people talking about biomass and storage and then taking it to extractors, and the extractors don't want to process it because of its low CBD content or whatever cannabinoid that they are targeting. And then we also saw, many forget about this, a reduction in demand from the brand side because, there was a payment processing hit hurdle that came into the market. A primary payment processor exited the market. So a lot of the folks who were selling CBD products and hemp products online lost their payment processing. So there's a big pause there. And the other thing that was happening, that's direct to consumer mostly, what we saw in retail was prices kind of coming down. So retail price points declined in the last 18 months, as one would expect, as more and more brands start selling through retail. And, consumers were picking these products up off the shelf, flipping them over, looking at the label and seeing that they had the same content. Or pretty much the same content, but their prices were often, one was 50% less than the other. And they, because they didn't have long-term brand loyalty developed, they would uh, they would try the new product, the cheaper product, and maybe they'd have a good experience there as well. So price is coming down. So everyone's sort of getting squeezed right now. It's not the best time, but this is one of those moments. It's a sorting of out of the players who are not sort of going to be able to produce, manufacture, sell, brand with excellence.
Well, you just talked for a second about consumers not having any brand loyalty because there's such proliferation. And part of that is that it's hard for them to evaluate, you know, beyond price, like, why should I take this or use this instead of this? And I'm wondering if you have any insight at all about investment in clinical science, any of the kind of supporting, again, that's ancillary science, but it's direct, really, that goes to quality and you know, what consumers are looking for, which is some kind of an effect.
Yeah, I mean, as investors in the sort of looking at consumer products or branded products, I think, you know, to look and invest in a company that's investing in science or at least has a plan for science, you know, the research is not yet all been complete. There's still a lot of cannabinoids and combinations of cannabinoids and terpenes that can have an efficacious impact that needs to be uncovered. So I think there's a lot of interest, at least we're seeing from the investment community and consumer products that have a science or a basis in science. And then the other side is a team that is really good at branding and selling. You know, to build a brand that resonates with consumers is critical to be successful. So you really got to have the science and the branding there. Those companies that really commit to that and, you know, place all their bets on those two elements, they seem to be the ones that are doing well in the market.
Yeah, so that's the winning combination. And what about overall company valuations? I mean, again, we were talking a little bit about some of the things that happened as COVID hit, but what are some of the other factors that have hit and maybe tripped up the market in 2019, 2020, besides COVID?
Well, I think we need to look back a little further into 2018, 2019, where we were seeing valuations trying to, you know, investors and entrepreneurs trying to assign valuations to this market. And they were looking to the Canadian licensed producers of cannabis, THC products. And those valuations were just going through the roof, 100 times sales. It makes no sense for any seasoned investor. Those valuations have come back down to earth. And I think, you know, we've been looking at these businesses and looking at them like they're dietary supplement companies, and, you know, fast growing natural products industry company, dietary supplement company. It's doing really well, but maybe not yet profitable, should get anywhere between 3 and 5 times revenues on a valuation. We were seeing 4 to 8 in the CBD and hemp space last year. But yeah, discounted valuations now for sure. We've seen offers and term sheets come in at 1x sales. And, you know, this is the opportunity for investors to really be able to drive valuation in their favor, and for entrepreneurs to try to figure out a way how they can build a bridge to tomorrow if they're not yet profitable.
Well, a little bit of a fall back to earth, so to speak. Noted. I'll just say that. let's just chat for a little bit about the regulatory environment. I mean, you know, we still don't have a federal standard in terms of trade and in terms of the ability to actually sell consumer products. So how is the regulatory environment affecting the investment activity?
Well, it's absolutely having an impact. You know, many hemp and CBD investors are not longtime consumer products investors in regulated environments. So they have little or no experience with the FDA and their approach and their sort of measured and methodical process. Fran, when we were working together, you know, we'd see warning letters, we'd see regulatory actions. It was something familiar and just part of the fabric of the industry, the dietary supplement and natural products. So, you know, we're just understanding that things take time. You know, CBD and hemp were legalized in fall of 2018, I believe. And here we are approaching fall of 2020. And, you know, we look back at the comments from industry experts and people in the hemp industry, and they were sort of, you know, this, they thought they were crossing the finish line, but it was really, they just got to the start line, right? And the gun had gone off. So the race had begun. It moves pretty slow with the FDA. They're trying to do their best and protect consumers. And this is a new category they got to learn. So they are going to take their time, but we're going to get there for sure. We're going to get there.
Well, there are a lot of different companies out there. So there's diversity in terms of knowledge, background. Do you see the investment community pulling up the industry at any point, you know, saying, listen, you know, we'll put some money in here if you do this, you know, related to making sure that the ducks are all in a row from a regulatory standpoint?
You know, Fran, I think that's a good question. We're not seeing that level of investment that I think some entrepreneurs and industry participants in the hemp and CBD space, they would like to see. And, you know, I think it's a bit of a trickle down. When the FDA moves slowly, when the retailers, the mainstream retailers, don't bring products on, when the big CPG companies or pharma companies aren't necessarily pulling the trigger on partnerships and deals in the U.S., that trickles down to the private equity and the venture capital investors and gives them pause. So I think, you know, even though we are so close to a fully regulated environment with CBD and hemp, and it feels like it could be tomorrow, right? It still hasn't happened. And there's a lot of folks in the closer to consumers in the mainstream retail, drugstore, grocery, food, drug, mass, right? And the distributors and the CPG and the pharma companies, they're just not ready to move. So that's putting a chill on the entire investing landscape around hemp and CBD right now.
Well, I guess that, you know, gives you a chance to talk to me about where you think the industry might be going moving forward right now. You know, what do you think the industry might look like in 5 years and then maybe even 10 years?
Yeah, it's sort of a million-dollar question, or maybe a couple billion-dollar question, isn't it? I am biased by my experience in the dietary supplement and natural products industry. So I believe that there will be part of the industry that will look a lot like the dietary supplement industry. Certainly, there's a number of players and associations that are representing the dietary supplement industry in DC when it comes to policy and these regulations and having the conversations. I do worry a little bit that the hemp and the CBD market upstarts are not being equally represented in DC. So the influence of the dietary supplement industry may trump that of the upstarts, but that is what it will be. I think in the future, we'll also see products that have better efficacy, bioavailability, and absorption. You know, that is a issue with dietary supplements, and it's an issue with hemp and CBD as well. We all know that the body is breaks down a lot of these nutritional ingredients when they are entered into the system, and only so much is absorbed in the body. And so the technologies and whatever you can do to increase that bioavailability and absorption is what you need to do. I think we need more safety data to frame the cumulative dose issue that the FDA has pointed out they're concerned about. These products are safe. And I think we'll end up seeing, hopefully, dietary supplement-like regulations for a lot of the cannabinoids. The question is, are we going to have to go through this same process with all the other non-psychoactive cannabinoids? Or will there be some elegant proposal in DC to legalize them all in one fell swoop? I would like to see that. But just imagine if we have to go through the similar process we're doing for CBD with CBG and CBN, all the others. This could be a pretty prolonged experience.
Well, that's an FDA wild card set of questions there. I'd like to bring us to a close, Patrick, but I want to ask you if you could offer any advice to dually to an upstart company getting into this space right now, what that would be. And also, what kind of advice would you give to an investor that's been sitting on the sidelines but thinking about investing in the hemp and hemp CBD industry?
For the entrepreneurs, I would encourage them to build a good network of folks who share their vision, right? So work on your team. Maybe you're not going out and trying to raise large sums of capital to do a big launch for your product line. I would encourage the entrepreneurs to take steps, assess, and then reformulate tactics and strategy. Selling online, breaking through, getting into retail, these are not easy things. There's the infrastructure hasn't been built. So there's going to be a lot of building it yourself. But if you do that in a smart way, you don't overextend your business and you can keep it afloat month to month to month. I think, you have a business today allows you to realize a vision of tomorrow. For investors, it's a bit of a buyer's market right now. You can, drive more investor-friendly terms than you did a year ago. And that's because so many companies had launched and done pretty well. And then, the expansion sort of slowed. Now, we've heard of some contraction in the market as well, but certainly we're not expanding as fast, I think, as we were 12 months ago. So, look for the teams that bring and have a long-term vision for science and brand and consumer following development. Without those two things, you can't even make it work when you get the distribution and figure it out. So, focusing on those, a strong team and a vision for the science, I think, for consumer products is key. Without that, there's a lot of folks who have been entrepreneurs and come to the industry with a lot of passion, but that doesn't mean they're going to be successful business people. So trust your gut when it comes to that stuff.
Well, excellent. Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to add to the conversation, Patrick?
I think what you're doing here is great for the industry. There needs to be more and more conversations that sort of speak to the truth of the industry. For so long, there's been a lot of virtue signaling and sort of just positive upon positive reinforcement of anybody doing anything in the industry. And what we know from our history in the natural products industry is that well-intentioned entrepreneurs can be successful. Well-intentioned investors can be successful. But the savvy ones, the ones who are analytical and understand the landscape and act aggressively with the best interests of the industry and then their business and investors in mind, get the most support and the most success. So now is the time to find the winning jockeys, the people who are not just surviving but thriving in this time that we're in, and it should make investing easier.
I really appreciate that, Patrick. Our goal with the Hemp Collective has always been to promote a quality industry and a sustainable industry, something that can grow and really support the needs of people in a well-intentioned but also fortified way. So I really appreciate your observation there. And with that, I'm going to thank you, Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank our listeners for tuning in today. And please come back for more content on the Hemp Collective in our podcast series.